Excuse me, I'm looking for Mr. Dutch Schultz. Do you know him?
Sure. Everybody knows a Dutchman.
Do you work for him?
No. I work for myself. My name is Ollie Madden. And you?
You're Ollie Madden?
Yeah.
You're very famous. I'm Vera Cicero. You own the Cotton Club, right?
Own a lot of things, Miss Cicero.
This is Ozarks at Large. With me is Randy Dixon from the David and Barbara Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History.
Hello, Kyle.
Hello, Randy. What did we just hear?
Well, that was from the 1984 Francis Ford Coppola film Cotton Club, and that was Bob Hoskins and Diane Lane. Bob Hoskins plays, as you probably heard in that clip, a mobster named Oney Madden, and that's who we're going to profile this week.
Yes. Why is this legendary sort of New York-connected mobster part of what we do today?
Well, he wound up in Hot Springs, Arkansas, lived his life out there. And so we're going to tell the tale of Oney the Killer Madden. He was born in Leeds, England in 1891, but his family moved over to America shortly thereafter, and he grew up in New York City in Hell's Kitchen. And, you know, that can be a rough place to grow up, but he adapted. And by the time he was 21, he was the leader of a really, really tough street gang, the Gopher Gang.
The Gopher Gang.
Yes, and he got the nickname the Killer because of his violent, crazy temper. And
I just want to interrupt. You usually don't get the nickname the Killer because you're very good with tulips.
Well, that's true.
Usually that's assigned to someone.
Yeah,
who...
or an exterminator
right.
of some sort.
Yeah, right,
well,
right.
But maybe he was. He would just brazenly kill people, a couple of them at least. And it was usually over a woman that are gang related. Mm. But one of his most brazen... Just to digress a little bit.
Sure.
He had a lot of girlfriends, and there was a store clerk who had asked out one of his girls. And so he stepped onto a cable car full of people and just blew him away.
Mm.
Of course, no one saw anything, and no one testified against him. So
right.
He came by that nickname pretty honest, I suppose. So anyway, he did end up in jail, in prison. He had a rival gang leader killed. His name was Little Patsy Doyle.
Uh-huh.
And he was sentenced to 20 years, only served 9 of it in Sing Sing. And when he was released in 1923, he bought what is now the world-famous Cotton Club. He bought the club from Jack Johnson.
The boxer.
Yes, yes. And it was a place called the Deluxe in Harlem, and he changed the name to the Cotton Club. And like I said, it became world-famous. So it's still open today.
And it had been closed for a while and then reopened.
Yes,
yeah.
A gentleman by the name of John Beatty reopened it in 1978, and he's still the owner. So I wanted to just hear from him about what it was like back in the day, the history that I'm sure is still a part of the Cotton Club. So I found him in New York. Actually, he wasn't in New York. He was elsewhere in the country traveling, but he was nice enough to talk to me. And here's John Beatty talking about the club that was once owned by Oney Madden.
So along came Oney Madden, and he needed a place to sell his booze, illegal booze, and a nightclub. So he made a deal with Jack and bought the club, and he renamed it Cotton Club. That was in 1923. And all of the white entertainers came uptown after they finished work downtown. And he came up to Harlem and sat in and played.
That was John Beatty. He owns the Cotton Club, which was once owned by Oney Madden, a notorious, infamous gangster who does end up living in Hot Springs. And,
yes.
And Oney Madden is the subject of this week's Pryor Center Profile.
That's right. Now, at this point, Oney Madden is really riding high. He's done his time in Sing Sing. He's out. He owns the Cotton Club. He also owns part ownership in about 20 other clubs. He has a cab company in New York City. And then he also has a liquor manufacturing operation. So the Cotton Club, let me tell you how big it was. The house band from 27 to 31 was Duke Ellington.
Ooh.
Well, and when he couldn't do it, he would have this guy named Cab Calloway and his band fill in.
Wow.
Well, Louis Armstrong played there. Lena Horne sang there. Now, here's the thing. All the performers and dancers, which was top-notch entertainment, were all black.
Mm-hmm.
And there were only white patrons allowed in.
Mm.
So it was very, I guess, segregated.
Sure.
Sure. And the performers were not allowed to interact with the patrons. As a matter of fact, when they would go on break, they would have to go next door.
Good.
And they would hang out in the basement of a building next door. But anyway, he's got all this going on. And there's a name that's going to come up in a minute, Joe Kennedy.
Okay.
Who was a liquor distributor at the time. Now, this is during Prohibition.
Yeah, right, right.
Well, Joe Kennedy,
right,
was Joseph Kennedy,
right,
father of former President JFK,
right.
So that's going to come up a little bit. They weren't always on good terms because they were kind of, you know, competing with each other because he had his operation going, and apparently Kennedy had his. Now, as far as the move to Hot Springs, the details are very, very murky, but I have three interviews here, all people who are quite knowledgeable about Oney Madden and his history, and they have similar but slight details that are different in the scenario.
Okay.
So I wanted to do all three of them. Now, our first is from a former FBI agent. Floyd Thomas, we heard from him last week.
He was talking about the boxes that would come out
and
of
go
the
to Orville Faubus's at the mansion.
Right.
So in addition to that, in his interview, he spoke to the Pryor Center in 2006, and he was assigned to Hot Springs during that time. But here's what he has to say about Madden.
Oney Madden owned a yellow cab company. In yellow cab, the taxis are a pretty good way to distribute illegal drugs and things around the city. And Oney, I understand, he didn't tell me this, but I understand that he was of opinion that Joe Kennedy had him on an extortion case. So they got over Oney and convicted him of extortion, but instead of sending him to penitentiary, the judge told him to get out of New York and don't come back. So he went to Hot Springs, owned it dead, and married a postmaster's daughter. Lived in a nice lifestyle, and far as I know, never worked. But he did get along, and he did have his ways. But I don't have it.
He hung out at the Southern Club.
Yes. Going every morning, drive his house over on Grand Avenue, downtown to the Southern Club, sit there out there in the table with a window. And there's a detective there that I finally got to visit with. We got friendly with, more or less. He'd get talked to. He wore alligator shoes. And
this is a Hot Springs City police detective?
Hot Springs
detective.
City detective. Wore alligator shoes and alligator belts and alligator billfolds and had five.
He had an expensive lifestyle.
Yeah, as a police officer, yeah. But he also drove on and batting around he wanted to go out of town or something, he was on his chauffeur on his, he'd sit there at the table with on a lot at the Southern Club.
All right.
So he was talking about the Southern Club.
Right.
Oney Madden was, a matter of fact, a part owner. He apparently had his fingers in a lot of things, but he was really good at flying under the radar. Always, well, unless he's killing somebody on a cable car.
Right, right.
But once he got to Hot Springs, he you know, just was out of sight. As a matter of fact, looking through all this in my journalistic investigation, I looked through KATV's material. There is not a single frame of Oney Madden.
Interesting.
And there are very few photographs, period, but KATV never got any footage of him. Mm. So he was good at staying out of the limelight. So last week we heard from David Hill, who wrote the book The Vapors, which is about gambling in the spa city over the years. And here's his take on Madden's move.
Oney Madden came to Hot Springs in the 1930s. He was a big-time New York City crime boss, and he had gone to jail for murder. And when he was released, you know, there were rumors that there was sort of a backroom deal cut with the governor of New York that if he was released from jail, that he would, you know, that he'd hightail it out of the state. And so, you know, he relocates to Arkansas, where the mob had some real interest in what was going on there. And he already had relationships down there. There was a woman that he was seeing that lived there, and he kind of became their man in Arkansas and ended up living the rest of his life there. But Oney Madden was a very well connected person in sort of the national crime syndicate, and his presence in Arkansas also, I think, afforded Hot Springs a lot of privileges and benefited a lot of the gambling clubs in Hot Springs that worked with Oney Madden.
Okay, let's hear one more.
Sure.
About the move. And this is a man who owns a museum in Hot Springs.
Oh, the Gangster Museum.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, Robert Raines. Have you been there?
I have.
Have you?
Yeah.
I have not, but I... Next time I'm in Hot
Springs,
you're
going to go.
I'm definitely going to go. But let's hear from Robert Raines about, you know, what he knows, because he knows, I mean, owning the museum, he would obviously know all things, you know, gangsters and gambling. But here's what Robert has to say.
When he came here, he knew a little bit about Hot Springs already, because a couple of his real good friends were Ralph and Al Capone. And Capone, of course, went to work for Torrio, who was also from New York. And so these guys had already been down here, Torrio down here early in the late 20s. And I say early in the late 20s, let's say 20 to 25. When he was running the outfit, he would come down here with his wife. That would bring Capone down here. So a lot of stories about Hot Springs and the amenities of Hot Springs went back to New York and ultimately to Chicago. It was just sounded like a pretty good place for people to go, not just from a tourism standpoint, but early on, there was kind of a hidden word here that the police and the law in general here were kind of in on the game, and they just... they could be very cooperative.
That is the Robert Raines, the owner of the Hot Springs Gangster Museum.
Yes, and he mentioned, you know, Capone
right.
and Torrio.
Right.
That's Johnny Torrio, who was a Chicago gangster, but he was very familiar with Hot Springs. You hear all these names thrown out, and I would just have to go back and look some of them up. I mean, some of them you know. You know, Al Capone, Bugsy Siegel.
Right.
But then you get into some of these others. So, you know, they were always depicted in gangster films, especially back in the 30s and 40s when you had Cagney and Edward G. Robinson.
George Raft.
Well.
Okay.
No, I mean, you want to go ahead and do it? We can go into it now. I was going to hold it for the end.
Let's hold it till the end.
Okay, a little
Forget
bit
I
about
said that. Yes,
famous actor,
yeah.
Played tough guys.
Yes.
George Raft. We'll save that.
Okay.
Back to the Pryor Center interviews. Some of the folks in the office remembered that one of our previous interviews had talked about the gambling, and he was a former FBI agent. So in 2012, the Pryor Center interviewed Orville Allbritten. So he's a sort of a historian on Hot Springs, and he's written several books about the history of Hot Springs and gambling in some of them. But he talks about the politics that were involved with Hot Springs and the gambling issue.
The question of every election was an open town or a closed town. Closed town meant no gambling, and open town meant wide open. And so you had these two factions.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people would say, well, it's a church faction. Not necessarily. A lot of the church people were also business people, and they saw the advantage of the town being exciting and bringing in people and so forth. But they were pretty well balanced. But generally, most of the time, the open town people had it. And so, consequently, you had these periods that would go for 20 years that would be wide open gambling. Then you'd have a reform group come in, and they would close it down for a while. And then when it was closed down, business would drop, and first thing you know, you had this element that was striving to get back in.
So let's check back with Robert Raines of the Gangster Museum, and he describes sort of the good old days when gambling and partying in Hot Springs were in full swing.
Back in those days, pretty much all of Central Avenue and from Grand to Park Avenue and Whittington Avenue, those were all some form of clubs or house of prostitution or a casino, as we called them, even though it's not as opulent, let's say, as Oaklawn or Saracen or any of these casinos today. But they all had machines. I think I've got a list on the wall in the casino gallery of the museum that the newspaper put out where they gave a list of the people who paid what they called an amusement tax, which was actually a tax to operate, a permit to operate an illegal business. Because on the permit, and that is in the museum too, you see large casino, small casino. There was an extra fee for having a larger one. And there were 101 people who paid those, who had those permits.
As Hot Springs has this, well, current gambling profile, but this legendary gambling profile, there is a gambling museum in Hot Springs?
Yes.
I did not know this.
Well, and it's set up. I plan to visit it too when I go back. But, I mean, they have all the, you know, the paraphernalia for gaming. They've got tables set up and roulette wheels and, I mean, all this original material that you would see in places like the Vapors or the Majestic. And they especially have slot machines.
Mm-hmm.
I got in touch with 84-year-old Tony Frazier, who works on the slots there, just as he did years ago in the days of Oney Madden. But he worked for a guy named Dane Harris, who was another nightclub owner, and I guess you would call an associate of Madden's. And Mr. Frazier talks about just the sheer number of slot machines that were around and what he did.
And we had machines in the Vapors and machines in the Belvedere and all over the city and the county and restaurants and bars and whatever.
And you would repair and maintain those?
Yes, sir. And we even built some of our own because we couldn't ship anything in from out of state. Federal laws kept us from doing that, so we had to, any updates we had to do it ourselves.
Oney Madden lived in Hot Springs for a long time.
From the 30s to the mid-60s when he died.
Yeah.
So, you know, like Floyd Thomas said, he didn't really work. So I wanted to know what exactly he did, you know, for the last decades of his life. And, you know, he did own the wire service in town, which was a huge moneymaker and illegal.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know how that works?
Yeah, you know what? I've seen the movie The Sting.
Right.
And that whole con is based on a wire service.
Right.
Yeah.
But if you control the wire service, you control when the information goes out, and that's mainly for horse racing and other sporting events that the bookies get their information. So if you control that, you control all the gambling in the area. So, you know, Robert Raines was telling me about that, and he told me sort of how Oney Madden would sort of skirt being a mobster, in that term. And I hate to use the overused term Godfather, you know, thanks to Mario Puzo.
Right.
But listen to the way Raines describes Oney and what he did do in town.
He probably could have maintained in New York City, but I think he liked it down here and he remembered it. He came down here and settled in. And that really became a nice last 40 years of his life for him. Because
now, was he involved in illegal activities in Hot Springs?
Not so much. The club owners here that I had interviewed before, the last of them kind of passed away, said that he was more of an advisor and a counselor, telling them really the best way and the cleanest way to cause the littlest trouble and the littlest news coverage. He would give them advice. They would go to him with situations, and he'd say, well, you know, here is the best way to work this out. And he was really more of a negotiator type boss than he was, you know, do this or I'll kill you.
Apparently, Madden kind of mellowed. I think in Sing Sing started it, and then he learned sort of to lay low. I mean, not well enough that he was going to be exiled to Hot Springs, but he really kept a low profile. So we end up with his name, Owen Vincent Madden, died in Hot Springs of natural causes.
Which is hard to do as a gangster.
Yes, sometimes. On April 24th, 1965, and he's buried in Hot Springs. Mm-hmm. You want to get back to the trivia?
Yes.
George Raft,
who was a legendary actor who famously played tough guys and gangsters.
Yes. So see if you know this.
He, for a while, was Oney Madden's driver.
Yes, as a kid.
Yeah.
What
are we going to talk about next week?
Well, how about climate change? When I was at KATV 25 years ago, we decided that we were going to do something about this fairly new topic that was coming up called global warming.
That's next week. What are we going to end with this week?
Well, you know, I mentioned that Duke Ellington had the house ban there from 27 to 31. So I found him performing with his Cotton Club Orchestra.